Chapter 3. Raya, wake up! Everyone else has already left! Groaning, I opened my eyes. Every muscle in my body felt like it had been hit by 1,000 tiny hammers. It was not a pleasant sensation. Forcing myself out of bed, I found Ella standing by impatiently.
How much time do we have?
We've got about 10 more minutes before breakfast ends to meet Master Barclay.
Barclay. Immediately, all exhaustion was forgotten, and I yanked my only clean dress over my head. I ran out after Ella, combing my fingers through my bedraggled hair and wishing I had more time. The two of us rushed through the courtyard and into the back entrance of the academy. We made it to the dining hall just as the platters were being taken back to the kitchens.
Wonderful.
Ella and I took our seats at the end of a back table. I had just spotted Alex a couple seats down when Master Barclay entered, looking stern and impressive in his silks.
Well, it looks like you are all still here. I will try my best to discourage that.
I flinched. Master Barclay's mood was worse than the night before.
What is he doing here?
I turned in the direction of Ella's whisper and saw where she was looking. The prince was seated one row from Alex. I had forgotten all about him.
Maybe he doesn't know,
I whispered, knowing my explanation sounded ludicrous even to my own ears. Master Barclay coughed loudly, and I felt my cheeks burn as I realized his scowl was fixed on Ella and me.
Have I bored you?
He drawled loudly. We quickly shook our heads, and I lowered my own, shamefaced. But Master Barclay wasn't done making his point.
Really? I insist. What is so fascinating that you needed to interrupt my lecture?
Nothing, I said quickly.
Him, Ella pointed. I quickly snuck a look at the prince and saw his garnet eyes fixated on Ella and me. The expression he wore was one of unadulterated loathing. I swallowed uncomfortably.
Ella?
Ha! Master Barclay smiled sardonically. Him? What about this him?
Ella stood nervously.
The council's treaty states no heir of the kingdom can undertake training as a mage, to prevent the crown from interfering with matters of magic.
The irritation in the young man's eyes had turned to daggers. I quickly looked away.
True, Master Barclay admitted. But the doctrine was alluding to firstborn children who would be inheriting the throne. Prince Darren is not.
But we've never had a prince before.
You've never had one before because nobody was good enough,
Prince Darren spat. I winced. There was no mistaking the indignation and resentment in his tone. Master Barclay laughed harshly.
Ah, my dears. You are so young to have already made such an unpleasant impression with a member of the royal family.
Ella bit her lip. I continued to stare at the ground. I could feel the prince's angry gaze burning us alive.
Well, now that these two girls have finished embarrassing themselves, would anyone else like to join them?
Silence.
Good. Now, before I send you off to your actual lessons, I want to make a couple of things clear. Each year, students enter my school claiming to have a gift. Please understand that having magic has never been and never will be enough. For most of you, the degree of power you possess is nothing short of insignificant.
The master grunted.
Unfortunately, it takes months of testing to determine. Were it weeks, there would never be such thing as a silly trial year in the first place.
Someone behind me snickered loudly. Apparently, they weren't worried, a sentiment I couldn't help wishing I shared.
The constable has informed me that we have 122 new faces this year. I advise you all to think long and hard on those odds. There will only be 15 apprenticeships. Do you really want to waste an entire year under the guise of hope?
He eyed the audience coldly.
10 months of hard labor, course study, and endless repetition. That is what you have to look forward to if you choose to stay.
Master Barclay eyed us speculatively.
Half this class will leave, of their own accord, by midwinter for that very reason. Well, that and the realization that their magic is not nearly as powerful as they had presumed. In any case, we will have a week-long trial for those that remain at the year's end. Which brings me to my final note before you begin your studies, and that is your faction. I know that each of you walked into the academy doors with a preconceived notion of which magic to train for. And for most of you, that faction is combat.
He eyed his dress, smiling ironically.
The black robes of the warrior class are world-renowned, undoubtedly inspired by the candidacy.
An elbow nudged me in the ribs, and I saw that Alex had made his way to where Ella and I stood. My twin gave me a crooked grin, and I shoved him back, knowing exactly what he was thinking. I already knew combat was a long shot, but it wasn't going to stop me from trying.
Still, I implore you to think twice. Consider perhaps the great skill of alchemy, or the healer's touch of restoration. Both branches commit their service to Gerard's defense, and yet they are underpraised in light of another's glory. You have 2 months before you actually commence the study of your chosen faction. It would be wise to consider those odds.
The master of the academy cleared his throat.
That said, I will now have Frederick lead you to your first lesson. I am sure you have much to think about in the hours that follow.
Leaving the atrium behind, Alex, Ella, and I followed a winding corridor to the left. I had just finished introducing the two when I noticed the prince watching us from the corner of my eye. "Don't look now," I said to Ella in a low voice. "But I am pretty sure if looks could kill, you and I would be dead already." Ella's eyes shot to whom I was referring to and then rolled her eyes. "Well, he can glare all he wants. I had a right to question his being here. Who cares if he's not firstborn? All it takes is one accidental stabbing and suddenly he's the realm's first mage king." "Would it really make that much of a difference?" Alex asked abruptly.
"If anything, I think having a member of the crown would help the mage's cause, not hurt it."
"You say that now," Ella replied. "But you wouldn't if you actually knew him."
"You know Prince Darren personally?"
I stared at her. Ella grimaced. "Oh yes, Darren and his brother. Trust me when I say not knowing is preferable." I was instantly curious. "What did they do?" Ella shook her head, clearly unwilling to drudge up memories of her life back in court. Alex glanced at me, and I shrugged. Our confusion faded momentarily, however, as we entered an enormous library with the rest of our class. The three of us took our seats in a hushed silence. Already, there was parchment and quill ready for note-taking. Beneath my chair, I discovered three heavy leather-bound books. I couldn't imagine the price they would have fetched back in Demshaw. Books were a privilege, a very expensive one that few nobles could even afford. Occasionally, a baron or duke might have had a small collection at home, but only the king's palace in Devon and the academy could have so many volumes as the ones I saw now. No matter where I turned to look, shelf after shelf greeted my incredulous gaze. Thousands of books and yellowing scrolls stacked high along the walls. And at the very end of each was a ladder leading up to yet another floor of manuscripts and tables. I hazarded a guess that the second floor was a study. There was another floor after that, but I could not make out what its contents were. Back at ground level, there stood a raised podium with two solid oak desks at its center. At the first sat a heavy-set woman in her mid-50s. Her brown hair was pulled back in a wavy bun, not a strand loose, and her powder was perfectly pressed. She was dressed very severely underneath a heavy blue cloak, with a high-laced collar and an emerald pendant clasped tightly around her neck. Her eyes had a severity that warned one not to fool around in her presence. To the woman's right sat a slightly twitchy man about 20 years her junior. His vest and pants were frayed, and his hair was rather ragged. He had an untrimmed mustache that lined his chin and upper lip, but it seemed more from neglect than the careful precision of Master Barclay. In an erratic sort of way, the master stood and nervously glanced around the room. Though he seemed to be out of sorts, his eyes spoke of kindness and intelligence. The duo introduced themselves as Masters Eloise and Isaac, and wasted no time in familiarizing the class with their expectations for the year. Magic was the very last thing on their agenda.
"There is no point in learning to cast if you haven't a clue what you're doing," Master Eloise sniffed. "What you need is basics. I don't care how much tutelage you have had. One can never know too much."
"Yes," Master Isaac added quickly. "'Tis far more important to know the why than the how in casting. The basics will give you that knowledge."
The basics, it turned out, were history, science, mathematics, and geography. No weapons, medicines, or anything of interest, as Ella had grumbled. I couldn't help agreeing. It would be 2 months before we would actually commence the study of our factions.
"This way," Master Eloise had noted, "I can be assured you have a proper foundation."
Four long hours later, mind reeling and stomach growling voraciously, I pushed my way past the slow mob of students and practically collapsed into the dining hall. Ella found me just as I was piling my plate high with salted pork, spiced cheddar, and a variety of colorful vegetables.
"Hungry much?" she observed.
"You have no idea,"
I said through a mouthful of toast. I could feel other first-year's eyes on me as I ravaged a second roll, and I made an effort to eat a little more slowly. For the 5 days it took us to get here, all we've eaten is rye and one too many handfuls of dried fruit, Alex added, snatching an apple off Ella's plate as he joined us at the table. Ella snatched her fruit back from my brother.
"I guess that explains why you looked like a ruffian last night."
Alex reddened and I snorted, drink spraying across the table. It had been a long time since I'd met a girl who was immune to my brother's charm. It was a refreshing and amusing change of pace. Ella turned back to me.
"Raya, you look wonderful today. Your hair is such an interesting shade. I've never seen one like it before. I bet all the boys back home loved you."
I choked into my glass.
"Hardly,"
Alex snickered.
"Rai was too tough for the boys in Demshaw. She was too busy fighting them to notice."
I kicked his foot. "We were training, not fighting, brother," I glanced at Ella. "What about you, Ella? You've only been here a day and you already have a shadow. That boy from the library?" She laughed loudly.
"Oh, James? He is hardly my type. I need a man's man, like that Master Barclay."
Alex cringed.
"But he's so old."
"And mean," I added.
"He was mean to us,"
Ella scoffed.
"He doesn't look it. Besides, he knows how to carry himself. I don't need any of the young men here. Most of them are younger than us. Have you noticed that?"
"The nobility," Alex offered. "They all took advantage of the early admission at 12 and 13, I'd bet."
"I don't see why," Ella frowned. "I am highborn, and it always seemed more of an advantage to wait until the cutoff at 17. A better chance to build up your powers, especially since they don't even start to emerge until adolescence."
She laughed lightly.
"But I guess the three of us didn't wait that long either. I suppose it's hard to wait once you've discovered your magic."
"Prince Darren is older," I observed. "And so are some of the others, too."
"He's one of the smart ones," Ella admitted. "He's had his powers for a while. Thankfully, most of the students rushed admission, like us."
I reflected on our first lesson. It certainly didn't seem that way in the library.
"All that extra tutoring," she assured me. "Not that I should resent them for it. My parents would have done the same if they hadn't been so set on a convent."
"Still, they knew so much more than me," I sighed.
"In Demshaw, Alex and I were one of the few kids who knew how to read and write, but that was only because our parents were merchants. I didn't even realize it would be part of our studies."
"Well, it makes sense, doesn't it?"
I just groaned and put my head in my hands.
"And all the work they gave us? It's the first day and they already expect us to read through 4 chapters and do 15 sets of those horrid math equations?"
"We can start on them now. We've got a half hour until our next session," she suggested lightly.
I frowned. "I would, but if I take in any more learning right now, I think my head will implode." Ella chuckled.
I'll study with you, Ella,
Alex said a little too quickly. He flashed her a winning smile. Ella turned to me, ignoring my twin.
It's not going to get better. Remember my brother. There's a reason people leave early on.
I shook my head. I'll meet you guys at the armory before our next session.
Okay,
Ella said, shrugging.
Just don't be late.
As I emptied my tray and started down the academy's long corridor, I spent the walk fantasizing about the goose-down pillows that were awaiting me back in the barracks. I was only 4 hours into my year, and I was already longing for sleep. It couldn't be a good sign.
First couple weeks are always the hardest.
I sighed. Or maybe that's just a saying, and it really is horrible all year long. I had just turned the corner when I suddenly collided with someone coming from the opposite direction.
I'm so...
I began, and then froze.
Seriously? Not again. Why was fate so determined to make me continuously cross paths with the one person who so clearly wished he'd never met me?
The prince tightened his lips and bent down to pick up the pieces of parchment he'd dropped. I reached down to help him, but he snatched them up before I could offer a hand. Straightening, Darren made way as if to pass, but I stood my ground. I had to apologize about earlier. Even if Ella were right about him, and she probably was, judging from our encounters thus far, I still owed him an apology. If someone had questioned my being here, I probably would have reacted in much the same way.
Your Grace, I began anew. I want to apologize for earlier.
Darren glared at me, but I continued on hastily. It wasn't right. You deserve a chance just as much as anyone else, especially since you are not the heir.
Thanks.
The non-heir cut me off sharply.
But I don't need some backcountry peasant asserting what I can or can't do.
My whole face burned in indignation.
I didn't mean...
Look,
Darren began, with as much irritation-free politeness as he could muster. It wasn't much.
I didn't come here to socialize with commoners and learn about their feelings. I came here to be a mage, so if you don't mind, I have more pressing affairs than listening to you apologize for your own incompetence.
Darren pushed past me as I stood, dumbfounded. Any initial guilt I had felt earlier was gone. I wasn't sure exactly how I had expected the apology to transpire, but certainly not the way it had. Even the highborn children back home hadn't treated me with as much hostility. There was nothing modest about this prince, this non-heir. Ella was right. There was no way I would want someone like that on the throne wearing a crown and a mage's robes. What had compelled the masters to make such a blatant exception?
You've never had one before because nobody was good enough.
That's what Darren had yelled at Ella and me. Was that why Master Barclay had decided to make the distinction between an heir and someone who was second in line to the throne? Because Darren had shown exceptional talent?
If he chooses combat, I'll wipe that arrogant sneer off his face the first chance I get, I decided.
How exceptional can a non-heir be, really? He wasn't even good enough to be firstborn and get a throne. It was a cruel thought, one that didn't even play out logically, but I welcomed it all the same.
I hope you lose out on an apprenticeship to many, many commoners.
Arriving at the large wood-paneled building that served as the academy's armory, I found Alex and Ella at the back of a crowd facing its doors. The two of them were chummier than before, and I began to wonder if introducing my brother to Ella had been a mistake. If she fell for him, I would lose the one friend I had gained since coming here. I'd certainly lost enough back home. Joining the two, I noticed that Ella seemed to be more entertained than enamored. I held on to the hope it would last.
Welcome, first years!
A booming voice roared. Immediately, everyone stopped talking and looked to the entryway of the armory. Out stepped the most intimidating man I had ever seen. Extremely tall with bulging muscle, the man seemed to crunch the ground with each step that he took. His hair was cut short, and his eyes were an almost disconcerting green. His dark skin was glistening, and he had several white scar lines that reached down across his arms. The man wore the livery of a knight, not a mage. Was there some sort of mistake?
No, I am not one of your masters here,
the man boomed, registering the crowd's shock.
But don't you be getting any ideas. I will still be involved in every step of your development this year. I served on the King's Regiment for 20 years, and the last 10 I've spent training young mages here alongside Master Cedric.
I noticed a thin, wiry man in red robes that had stepped out behind him.
I am Sir Piers, and I will be leading you in the physical conditioning needed for your factions.
I thought we were to be sorcerers, not pages, someone hissed behind me. A chortle of quiet voices voiced the same irritation. Sir Piers heard them and glowered. Instantaneous silence.
Many of you might wonder what use I am to your precious studies. Can I have a volunteer, please?
No one moved.
I have my pick, then,
he announced almost gleefully, dragging forward one of the boys that had been whispering behind me. The boy was shaking, and I really couldn't blame him. Sir Piers was a big man and clearly enjoyed scaring his charges.
Now, what is your name?
Ralph.
Well, Ralph, it's your lucky day. Which faction do you want to end up in?
Combat?
Ralph squeaked.
Yes, always with you first years,
the man laughed.
Now,
Piers continued,
show me what you can do.
It's not much,
Ralph stammered, snatching a twig off the ground. He began to stare at it intensely, and I knew almost instantly what he was going to do. Seconds later, the familiar sprout of tiny flames encompassed his stick. Great, I thought darkly. Ralph didn't even need to hurt himself to get it burning. A 12-year-old showed more promise than me.
Now,
Piers said after the twig had turned to ash,
I want you to run a mile, the course of the stadium's circumference.
Ralph's face fell.
What are you waiting for?
Piers barked. Ralph took off like a jackrabbit, but about 2 minutes into the run, his pace slowed. I could sense his discomfort. None of us had dressed with a strenuous workout in mind. I was still wearing my dress. For the next 7 minutes, poor Ralph ran around the track huffing and puffing as the rest of the class watched, careful to avoid meeting eyes with Piers and becoming his next volunteer victim. Eventually, a sweaty, shaking Ralph returned to his spot in front of Piers.
Light fire to another stick,
Piers ordered him.
I,
Ralph choked,
need a moment.
Now!
Ralph scrambled to find another branch and tried to repeat the same casting, to no avail. He was too busy taking deep gulps of air to concentrate.
You just gave the enemy an opening, boy. You are now dead on the battlefield. Take your seat.
Piers eyed the boy unhappily and looked around.
Do I have another volunteer? Someone with more prowess in mind?
Everyone looked to the ground quickly, except for the non-heir who seemed unperturbed as he met Piers' eyes dead on.
All right, princeling, have at it.
Darren stepped forward and picked up a twig. I breathed out a sigh of relief. He was normal like the rest of us. It would have killed me if he put on some sort of supernatural display. Darren clenched one end in his palm, eyeing a nearby tree.
You've got to be.
The entire trunk exploded in a blaze. Branches with crackling leaves crashed to the ground as the tree became a charred black torch. The non-heir cracked the twig in his palm. The fire instantly abated. Dead tree limbs scattered the grass. Darren looked to Piers for instructions. I glanced at Sir Piers as well to gauge his reaction. Both the commander and the wiry Master Cedric had approving smiles on their faces.
Well done,
Piers boomed.
Now, do the same to that tree, there.
We all looked to see where he was pointing. A similar oak stood half a mile off at the other end of the stadium. I braced myself, knowing better than to hope the prince would fail miserably. Darren reached down to grab one of the small charred branches from the first tree he had lit fire to. Part of the stick still looked red-hot beneath its gray exterior, and I wondered if it burned. Still, Darren showed no sign of pain as he rolled it back and forth between his palms, keeping his stormy gaze on the target. Moments later, the tree caught fire.
Not as dramatic as the first, but still impressive,
I noted dryly. The fire quickly died out on the trunk, but continued on in most of the higher branches.
You may take a seat now,
Piers told the non-air in a much friendlier tone than he had addressed the previous boy. Darren nodded curtly and then made his way over to the bench where Ralph sat. Piers addressed the rest of us.
What did those two have in common?
Nothing.
The dynamics of war,
Piers continued when none of us spoke up.
Show us what may not be openly obvious to you magic folk. You think you can blast your enemy with sheer force, and maybe you can. But the further you are from your opponent, the less power you are able to exert. We can't waste all this time training you to be powerful mages and have you faint at the first sign of battle. Not one of you will be sitting in an ivory tower pointing your finger and making your enemies crumble. You will need to be close to your enemies to do damage, but you need to be able to maneuver in and out of battle to safely engage. By building up your physical reserves, we will be increasing your tolerance to pain and your fortitude. By strengthening your prowess, you will be more capable of focusing during moments that test your will. Early on, the council learned that they were losing too many mages' lives on the battlefield. In response, we developed a training program that incorporates the physical conditioning we put the pages in the School of Knighthood through. While none of you will be as successful as a full-fledged knight, this program will better prepare you for the realities of battle. It gives you more endurance, whether you are a restoration mage going from one wounded to the next, or an alchemist helping with dangerous flasks. For the faction of combat, it is a little easier to picture the battlefield, but even if you were to never participate in a single war, endurance and fortitude can only help, not hurt. So for the rest of the day, I will be gauging your physical competence. When you walk away today, I will have a thorough understanding of how badly out of shape you are. And then from tomorrow on, we will be attempting to fix that.
Oh, Sir Piers added, almost gleefully.
And if you are wondering when we will train with any of the fun weapons you may have seen a knight handle, keep in mind you have to get through 2 months of my class first. Now, we have a change of clothes for the lads and ladies in the building behind me. Those will be your attire for the rest of your time here at the academy. After today, you will no longer be wearing personal garments or insignia. You will notice the garb is old, ill-fitting, and not particularly attractive. That is to be expected. Year one is not a cause for celebration, and so the masters do not waste coin financing your personal fashions. We will go ahead and let the ladies go first. Lads, while you are waiting your turn, I advise you to start stretching. It's going to be a long 2 hours.
2 hours into the pain and agony that was Sir Piers's idea of light conditioning, I found myself dry heaving at one of the wooden benches on the side of the field. I heard Alex off to my right making similar noises. All over the stadium, first years were dropping one by one. Piers had decided we would run 5 miles. 5 miles, he added, interspersed with 20 lunges and presses each time we completed a lap. That would have been fine, hard but fine, if that were all he had asked of us. But it had only been a warm-up. Once we had completed his first demand, Sir Piers had barked new orders for everyone to line up across from one another. When we did that, he had heaved heavy wooden staffs at us and instructed us to proceed. Since most of the girls and a couple of the lowborn boys had never held a weapon in their life, Piers then had to show us how to hold the poles, where to stand, and which way to lean our weight. We spent just as much time wrapping each other's knuckles as we did the staffs. When one girl had dared to quietly ponder the usefulness of the drill to her partner, Piers snapped.
You think you'll never need to use a weapon, girl? What happens when you have used the last of your magic and you are stranded in the middle of a battlefield? When a mage is powerful enough to send daggers cutting through the air, do you think he randomly decides their course?
No,
He studies and practices exactly which cutting blows are needed to hit those precious arteries. Nothing I teach you here will be pointless.
For the remainder of our lesson, no one dared to brave a single complaint. Even when he decided to introduce a new routine involving the many flights of stairs surrounding the field. But that still didn't stop our bodies from reacting to the horrible circus of exercises Piers was putting us through. Taking a deep breath, I told myself that it couldn't get any worse. We were on a 15-minute break before our session with Master Cedric, but for most of us, the 15 minutes was spent trying to crawl or limp our way to a display of water pitchers on the other side of the stadium. Refreshments had been brought courtesy of Constable Barius's staff, all of which had decided to take a late afternoon break. I think the water was just an excuse for their entertainment. Still, entertainment or not, water was what I wanted. As luck would have it, by the time I reached it, there was almost none left. Greedily, I downed what remained and then scanned the bench for any unattended glasses I could finish off. None. Had I really expected anything different? Deciding I had only a minute or so left, I sat down to observe the rest of the student body from my resting place. Ella stood a little way off, red in the face and a little clammy, but somehow still charming in her disheveled state. She was talking to my brother as he attempted to stretch his calves. The two of them were chuckling at a joke he had just made. I winced. I couldn't even imagine laughing. My lungs were still burning from those stares. Shifting my gaze to the left side of the field, I spotted a group of five that appeared much better off than the rest of the class. At their center was the newfound bane of my existence. Admittedly, the non-air wasn't that hard of a poison to swallow when he was far away. He looked so casual, leaning against the fence post, surrounded by laughing companions. Whether or not he was a prince, Darren had clearly spent a large part of his lifetime in the sun and immersed in some sort of physical engagement. Far from being out of breath and drenched in sweat, the prince made Piers's drills appear as if they actually were an intended warm-up. Even his hair seemed unaffected. While most of us, myself included, had hair sticking to all sides of our face, Darren's had somehow maintained its natural, slightly tussled state. Short, choppy, sideswept bangs and jaw-length locks that could trick a girl into thinking he was attractive. That is, if you could get over his charming personality, because no matter how alluring he might seem from afar, up close, Darren's hostile eyes would undoubtedly tell a different story. Still, as I watched him now, I was not seeing anything remotely unreceptive in them. Possibly, very likely, because of the beautiful girl on his right, Priscilla. Ah, yes, the one young woman who had outdistanced, outlunged, and outpressed the rest of my gender. How someone from such high lineage was able to best those of us who had had to actually forage and hunt for our food, I will never know. With her long, silky brown hair, violet eyes, and sinewy curves, I could understand Darren's interest, but not her status. Priscilla looked the part of a highborn lady, and I wondered why she was here at the academy. Usually, girls like that went to convents. They didn't bother with magic or knighthood. They had no need. Priscilla was older than most nobility in attendance, too, and I vaguely wondered if it had anything to do with Darren since he seemed to be around the same age. Maybe she had followed him. The rest of the non-heirs group consisted of the two burly-looking brothers and a young girl whose skin was so pale, it seemed translucent. The girl was so tiny and fragile, I wondered how she had made it into their little following. She didn't talk much, and she seemed more interested in something on the ground than her companions.
"All right, children, let's gather round,"
Sir Piers barked. We all came together slowly, regretfully acknowledging the end of our break.
"Well, well, that wasn't so bad, was it?"
None of us dared to contradict him. Sir Piers chuckled at his own joke, knowing very well what our silence really meant.
"Well, you always have tomorrow. I will go ahead and leave you in Master Cedric's capable hands."
With that, Sir Piers left the field, and we found ourselves waiting anxiously for Master Cedric to begin his own introduction. Master Cedric nodded to his audience and spoke with a much softer inflection to his tone.
Well then, for the next 2 hours I am going to be leading some basic exercises that are conducive to all factions.
I glanced at Alex and Ella excitedly. Finally, actual magic.
This first month will be spent emphasizing magic's most important foundation, focus. Without the proper application, you will not be successful in your chosen practice.
My enthusiasm died.
Focus.
So we wouldn't be learning how to heal a dying knight or cast a lightning storm. Not today. I had to say, I'd had enough meditation practice during my time on the road. 2 hours of coarse physical activity might actually beat the boredom induced from focusing on a blade of grass for the same length of time. I heard someone groan to my right.
You might have great potential,
Cedric interjected loudly over his disgruntled audience, an incredible feat for such a timid-looking man.
But if you can concentrate long enough to will the magic you wish to enact, you will never find yourself beyond the basics. The more advanced castings require a greater dedication that cannot come from acts of whimsy. Mages die quickly on the battlefield when they can't summon proper focus. As Sir Piers said, you will not be hidden away in a tower. You will be immersed in an atmosphere full of distractions waiting to tear your concentration apart. You will also not be performing simple steps. If you go into restoration, you will be expected to understand the anatomy of an individual when you are caring for a deep flesh wound. Collapsing a tower in combat would require you to understand its structure and materials. It's important to know where to make your magic touch count. You could blindly devote your magic to the entire attack you want to enact, or you could learn to focus your magic on specific components so that your castings are precise and don't exert any needless energy. Now, let's not waste any more time and begin your first exercise.
I grudgingly joined the rest of the class in forming a giant sitting circle that spread out across the grass at Master Cedric's instruction. From this angle, we could see not only the master and his four assisting mages, but everyone else in our group as well. At least I'll finally stand out, I told myself. I may not have had practice fighting with staffs or learning the names of Gerard's eastern seaports, but at least meditation was something I was good at. Years of failed magical attempts could attest to that. The next 2 hours seemed set aside to prove me wrong. I wasn't horrible, but I was at best a little better than the norm. Master Cedric and his assistants walked around our giant group, each carrying a heavy satchel filled with small white pebbles that they distributed each time one of us failed the exercise. For the first half hour, we had simply been instructed to close our eyes and keep still. We were to maintain an air of calm and to focus on a moment of peace and tranquility. That was easy enough. But then I realized the role the instructor and his assistants were playing in our meditation. Pouring hail 1 second, thousands of angry bird cries the next. I tried not to flinch when I felt the slimy, wiggling body of a snake against my skin. But I could not suppress the tiny whimper that escaped my lips when I felt thousands of tiny bug-like wings on my face. I opened my eyes just in time to see one of the assistants set 2 stones by my feet. Luckily, most students had a small pile forming next to them as well. Unfortunately, there were still those without a white rock to bear. For the second part of our exercise, Master Cedric had the class keep their eyes open while continuing to practice the same meditative state. Of course, sight only made our practice harder. It was not easy to remain calm when you realized a horde of angry rodents was headed in your direction. Whenever I made a mistake, I'd take a quick peek to see how everyone else was faring. Most had as many as I, but there was still a small portion of our class that hadn't collected any stones yet. Darren and his group of 4, plus 7 others. As minutes ticked by, the exercise got increasingly difficult. The small piles began to resemble mountains. My forehead pounded, my muscles ached, and sweat stung the corners of my eyes. I was trying hard not to give in to the distractions Master Cedric and his assistants were casting. But fear and surprise were not easy reactions to ignore. When a small stampede of spiders took over the field and proceeded to climb up several students' arms, mine included, I lost it, screaming and shaking the vile insects off. A lifetime of fear could not be erased in 2 hours. Eventually, the session ended. We all looked at one another and greedily eyed each other's failures. No one was stoneless, not even Darren and his cohorts. The pale blonde-haired girl had only 2, and Darren and a couple others had no more than 5 apiece. I had 20. Alex had even more. Ella, 15. We were all failures in comparison to the prince and his following. Everyone waited to be dismissed.
How many of you have changed your minds about the uselessness of meditation now?
Cedric rasped. Several of us cast our eyes down, shamefaced.
As you have just witnessed, we are too often allowing sight to dictate our actions. That's fine in day-to-day living, but it will not get you very far in your magical studies. Most of you were sufficient in the initial stages of your meditation. That is, until you opened your eyes and saw what types of horrors my assistants had cast. Sight is not an understandable reason to lose focus. Sight cannot harm you, and it should not be a cause to waver in your meditation. Sight can only invoke fear, not pain. Physical pain is an understandable reason to lose focus. Sight is not. The precious seconds between seeing the snake, a harmless act, and its venomous bite could make all the difference in a casting. Focus cannot be rushed, that is true. But in magic, every second counts. If you want to succeed here, you had best master your fears early on, because sight is the least of your worries. There are 2 much more uncontrollable detractors of focus, pain and emotion, which will require much more effort to control.
Master Cedric cleared his throat.
As I see it, there are many of you who will fail. The academy is not meant for everyone. Today's exercise is usually a strong indicator of how the year will end. Thus, if you did not perform well today, keep in mind you will most likely continue to struggle throughout the rest of your study.
As I trailed off to the dining hall with the others, I bitterly acknowledged the reason so many resigned early on. Why waste a year when it was so blatantly obvious how behind I was? There was no doubt who the most promising first years were. Not one member of Darren's highborn following had been below the top quarter of our class for any of the master's lessons. Of course, I shouldn't have expected anything less. The prince's contemptuous comments earlier on had made it clear that he would only associate with the best. Now, his group of 5 had expanded to include 7 more. 4 of the newcomers were not of noble standing from what I could tell either, but all of them had done well, extremely well in comparison to the rest of our class. Apparently, the non-air would make exceptions to be around commoners. But I, like most of the low-born students present, was not promising enough to be worthy of his time. Glancing around the dining commons, I saw more evidence of changes taking place. At the morning meal, students had sat next to friends or others of similar background. Now, more emphasis was spent on sitting with those that had performed at one's own level during training. At the far end of the hall, where I had previously sat, were the rejects of our year, those that had not performed well in the first day's sessions. Toward the front of the room were those that had. At the very head of the dining hall was Darren's table. While the prince had yet to arrive, a small cluster of loud highborns sat waiting for him. Their dreams were shattered moments later when Darren and his company of 11 appeared. One sharp look from the non-air sent the disgruntled nobles retreating to a less prestigious table. They spent the rest of their meal eyeing the 4 commoners of the prince's new crowd jealously. Rather than trying to negotiate a spot based on skill, I sat down in the only available open seating, the far end of the reject table. I was pleased to notice Alex and Ella followed. It would have been difficult if my brother and friend had decided they were too proud to sit beside me. It had been a rough first day. I spent the entire course of dinner listening to a lively exchange between the 2 while I pushed gravy-soaked peas across my plate. Alex and Ella seemed to be the only ones that found our entire situation humorous. While everyone else was strategizing or complaining, my brother and friend were more concerned with making me laugh. I felt grateful for their company. I needed more positivity, and while many of their jokes were at the expense of our own mishaps, it was nice to laugh them off.
"Did you see me during our drills with Sir Piers?"
Alex was asking. Ella snorted. "I was too busy breathing to notice anyone besides myself."
"Well, while you girls were busy attempting to keep up with us men?"
"Hey," Ella and I both interrupted. We had both done better than Alex in conditioning. My brother might have brawn, but he had spent the majority of his life indoors.
"I was trying to romance a lady that was actually performing well during the drill,"
Alex continued on, grinning. "And how did that go?" I interjected.
"Well, and which damsel in distress would she be?"
Ella taunted.
"I saw you entertain several before class had even started."
It looked like my dark-skinned friend was not enamored after all.
"Hardly," Alex chuckled. "What you may allude to as flirtation, I call harmless conversation."
Ella and I exchanged amused looks.
"So I tried to strike up a conversation with that lovely lady."
He finished, pointing his orange to Priscilla from Darren's entourage. It was at just that moment the girl raised her eyes to catch the three of us staring. I saw her frown and turn to the rest of her table to whisper something, shooting a disgusted glance in our direction.
"Seems like a fan," I remarked casually.
"Sure it went well, lover boy? That looks more like disdain than admiration," Ella added.
Alex tore off a bit of rind from his orange and threw it at us.
"Well, it started off well enough. I'd caught her eyeing me a couple of times during practice."
"Probably in an attempt to avoid you," Ella laughed.
"So I figured I'd try my chance at some conversation. I'd just managed to catch up to her when my foot caught on one of those lovely stairs Piers had us climbing. So, of course, I did what anyone else does when they are falling. I grabbed onto the nearest support, which just happened to be the lady in question. She left in a hurry after that little incident. Shot me the look of death, that one did. Now all I can think is that not only did the girl outrun me, she also thinks I'm a complete chump."
"You poor thing. Most of the class can outrun you,"
Ella sympathized, patting his shoulder and laughing at the same time.
"Can't believe you thought you had a chance with Priscilla."
Alex guffawed, but then continued stubbornly.
"But why not? I thought status wasn't supposed to matter here."
I choked on my roast, and Ella just rolled her eyes.
"It will always matter to some,"
I finally managed to say through a mouthful of spinach. Darren's angry eyes flashed in my mind.
"Especially," Ella added, "to those who plan on joining the royal family."
She jerked her head in Priscilla's direction.
"Are you sure?"
Alex asked reluctantly.
"I grew up with her," she replied. "Believe me, that girl has eyes for one thing and one thing only."
"So she's here for Prince Darren,"
Alex surmised.
"Most definitely."
Ella twisted the water glass in her palm.
"Her parents are very well-known courtiers. Social climbers like Priscilla's family dedicate their lives to building close relations with the crown. Priscilla is a very pretty girl, and her family has enough standing to make her a very eligible wife. Everyone knows that, as future king, Prince Blaine's hands are tied with a political marriage, but Darren's are not. Every power-hungry family and court who has a daughter around his age has been after that title since the day he was born." As I listened to Ella, I found myself watching Priscilla interact with those closest to her. Ella could say she was power-hungry, but the girl had still performed very strongly in all of our lessons today.
"I don't think she's just here for the prince," I remarked, causing both Alex and Ella to start. I continued, "Priscilla's much too prepared. She might want to secure an engagement, but I think she came here for a robe." Ella just shook her head.
"If she wasn't good, she wouldn't have a chance at the throne to begin with."
"Why?"
"Because magic is all that prince cares about," Ella explained dryly. "I thought he'd grow out of it, but since he's here, I'm quite certain he hasn't. Priscilla and her parents were undoubtedly smart enough to figure that out.
I'm sure as soon as they realized how serious he was about the academy, they got her the best tutor money could buy.
I looked back to the end of the table where Priscilla and Darren and the rest of their following were seated. I'd already started to hear rumors that the prince and his entourage were going to make the apprenticeship.
Really? On day one, to already have that kind of reputation? It isn't fair.
Alex noted my stare.
I heard some people have already decided to change their faction.
Huh?
After practice today, some of the others were saying they didn't want to be second best. Two people said there was no point in hoping for combat when the odds were so set against them.
Master Barclay's predictions were already coming true. I couldn't believe it.
They might say that now and change their mind later,
Ella pointed out. Jeff changed his mind 3 times before the end of his first month.
I can see why, I remarked slowly.
When you are competing with someone who even Master Cedric and the others are impressed with, they have seen hundreds of first years. To impress them at this point means you really stand out.
Ella folded her arms. Well, future apprentice or not, no one is going to sway me but me.
Once we had finished off our dinner, Alex, Ella, and I headed to the library's upper study to begin the day's assignments. Most of the class had gone off to the barracks to wash. Though the three of us were smelly and not particularly attractive at the moment, we knew we would fare better studying without the echo that 100 or so lowered voices would bring if we cleaned up first like everyone else. Entering the room, it was immediately evident that we were not alone. There were a couple of other small groups already inside, but they were few in number. They seemed friendly enough, so I didn't mind much. I recognized one girl, Winifred, as someone from back home. Alex recognized another, Clayton, his friend from a nearby village. Before long, we had amassed a small group of our own. Alex, Ella, and I, Winifred, Clayton, another boy named Jordan, a girl named Ruth, and Ella's admirer from the library, Shy James. It was nice to study in the company of so many. We all had something to contribute to someone else's work. While Winifred spent most of her time lecturing us on the mathematical equations we were trying to break down, Alex and I helped with the sections on herb lore. Having parents who owned an apothecary was an advantage. Ruth and Clayton were able to assist with geography, and Ella, shockingly enough, with history, especially the battles. As she explained to our speechless group, Ella used to follow her father around while he drilled the village soldiers and then practiced later in private. No wonder the girl wanted combat. She had a warrior mindset I envied. It also explained why she had fared better than most of us in Piers' conditioning. Ella had been second only to Priscilla and a couple of the boys. Even if none of us knew the answer to a problem, 8 of us searching different volumes provided much quicker results than trying to do so independently. By the time the rest of our class had arrived, most of the assignments were finished. Packing up my work, I felt a lot more confident than hours before. I still had problems to complete, but they were significantly fewer in number. The only thing that detracted from my mood was Ella, or rather, her insistent whispering and pointing as we turned the corner to exit. Darren and his entourage had arrived, and in the short time they had done so, they had already taken over the most comfortable lounge in the library. This had left the rest of the 90 students trying to squeeze into the smaller aisles on the second floor. No one looked happy.
Injustice at its finest, Ella hissed when we shut the door behind us.
Treating the academy like it is just another court back home. Alex glanced at our friend, eyebrow cocked.
You really don't like the prince, do you?
No.
Why?
Several heads turned to glance at Ella, myself included.
True, I was no fan of the angry-eyed prince, but Ella had never told me what it was Darren had done to make her hate him so venomously.
I had my own reasons for not liking the prince, but Ella's hatred seemed much more impassioned. Maybe now I would hear the reason behind this loathing. Ella set her mouth in a hard line.
It's none of your concern, Alex.
My brother looked disappointed.
I was hoping for a good story.
I had to admit, so was I.
Well, there's nothing to tell, she replied tightly. Her lively brown eyes were unreadable in the candlelight.
Alex laughed uncomfortably.
Just wanted to know what the poor guy did so I didn't repeat his same mistake. I'd hate to have the hatred of such a beautiful lady.
Ella smiled slightly, and the tension in the hall left the air.
You are much too charming to make the same mistake, she told him lightly. Then she leaned forward to kiss him on the cheek.
She had to stand on the tips of her toes to reach his suntanned face, and by the time she finished, his skin had a deep red tint to it. Ella continued down the hall while Alex stood frozen in place, eyes trailing after as the girl turned another corner and disappeared.
Don't you even think about it, I warned him.
His
face grew redder, and conscious of the amused expressions of our group, he shook his head to clear away the confusion, sandy brown locks flailing wildly in his attempt.
I have to go.
Alex took off in the same direction as Ella, though he was headed toward the boys' housing. Clayton snickered.
I think Ella is going to give your brother a run for his reputation.
She's only interested in older men like Master Barclay, I replied without thinking.
People say a lot of things. That doesn't mean they are always true, James piped up, a little too eagerly.
We all laughed at the truth of his statement and parted ways to our barracks. I spent most of the time making small talk with Ruth and Winifred until we had finished bathing. By the time I entered our sleeping quarters, the rest of the girls had arrived with large piles of parchment, books, scattered across the floor in every which direction. Out of the corner of my eye, I saw Priscilla directing a scrawny girl where to set her load. Meanwhile, Priscilla sat idly brushing her long locks and complaining loudly about how much harder it was going to be for her to rest surrounded by this low-born mess. Somehow, from Priscilla's tone, I didn't think she was referring to the books. I think she and the prince will do nicely together, I remarked quietly to Ella as she sat down on the bunk next to mine. They are easily the nastiest people here. Ella smiled. Do you still have work left? I asked her.
No, I finished most of mine earlier during the break at lunch.
I looked longingly at my pillows. I still had at least an hour of assignments left.
I still have a couple problems, too, Ruth offered from a couple bunks down. What time do they check the lights?
Winifred wondered.
I think the constable said 11, which should be any minute now, another girl next to Winifred remarked.
Do we have any candles or matches? I needed to finish my work somehow.
I don't think so, but I can conjure light, Ruth offered quickly. Do you want to try and finish your work with me after the constable has finished his rounds?
I nodded, grateful for her offer and jealous she had a skill I didn't at the same time. We decided to go to the bathing corridor so as not to keep the others up with our studying. Unfortunately, about 10 minutes after we thought the constable had finished his rounds, his servant Frederick pounded on the door and demanded we go to bed at once. Fearing the reprimands Barius had promised, we quickly heeded Frederick's order. I was a little nervous that I had not finished, but at that point there was nothing I could do until morning came.
Please wake me when you are up, I whispered to Ella as I crawled into my bunk. I still need to finish my work.
Mm-hmm. I hoped she would remember in the morning. I wrapped myself in my blankets and shut my eyes. In a matter of moments, I had forgotten the day's events and was fast asleep.